Hello and welcome to Pandora's Box. This is Kalia, and today our podcast is From Codependence to Soul Dependence. Codependency is the buzzword of the recovery movement, which initially emerged from the term co-addict. Initially, a codependent was the partner in crime with the alcoholic or drug addict. Al-Anon was a support group formed for those who had painful relationships with an addict. But as the understanding of addiction and co-addiction developed, we came to realize that codependency is its own addiction. It stands alone. It was likely in place long before the individual hooked up with the addict. In fact, hooking up with the addict ensured the survival of the codependency. It gave the codependent that external focus. If the codependent could focus on the drinking of the alcoholic or the drug use of the addict, or even now the narcissism of the narcissist, he or she could remain ignorant of his or her own addictive personality. What we've come to realize is that we live in a codependent society, and most people are codependent in some way. And this is because we are conditioned by our society to be outer or other focused rather than inner or self-focused. Even a narcissist, whom we often label as being about the self, is actually other-focused. An outer source is needed for the survival of the narcissist, or at least the ego believes so. Those who get involved with and stay involved with a narcissist are codependent as well. One becomes so hooked in to the dance around the behavior of the narcissist that life takes on a survival-like quality that is based on reacting to the behavior and even attempting to control or cure the behavior of the narcissist. As we dive a little deeper into codependency, we recognize it is its own disease or addiction. There is a disease model that is used in the 12-step programs, which indicate all addicts are actually suffering from the disease of addiction. Because the 12-step programs help so many people, I won't argue with the disease model. However, I prefer to look at addiction and codependency as dysfunctional coping strategies formed in childhood rather than a disease. We're out of balance. We're disconnected from source. We don't trust ourselves or others. We've never learned to deal effectively with our emotional pain, and we use our addictions to self-medicate. You could say that all addiction has its roots in codependency, as all addicts are looking for the solution to their pain and suffering outside of themselves. Whether it be drugs, alcohol, sex, workaholism, food, gambling, narcissism, or relationship addiction, one is looking to fill his or her inner emptiness through an outer pursuit. Although outer pursuits do provide a temporary distraction from one's inner emptiness, it is only temporary. It does not fill the emptiness. It does not heal the fracture within. The only thing that can heal the fracture and bridge the distance between the mind, the heart, and the soul is to delve deeply into our inner world. I call my work the path back to self because it is through healing our own relationship with self that we can truly be liberated from the pain of our addictions and dysfunctional relationship to others. The key is a return to the inner world, to self-understanding, to self-knowledge, and ultimately to self-love and self-awareness. When we are outer-focused, we blame and shame others for failing to meet our needs. We focus on the behavior of the other, judge and find fault with others, and shame, blame, find fault with, and judge ourselves. In any given moment, we're either blaming and judging ourselves or blaming and judging someone else. But it is the very act of blaming, judging, shaming, and criticizing that you separate yourself from others, from self, and from the God of your understanding. As codependents, our relationship with others suffer because our relationship to ourself is suffering. In order to heal our fractures with others, we need to heal our fracture within. Of course, the word fracture itself would indicate something is broken. And codependents in their shame-based thinking believe they are broken. The deeper truth is we're not broken. The fracture is actually an illusion that separates us from our own divinity. We're not broken. It is our thinking and our believing that is fractured. We actually heal by learning to see life differently and adopting new ways of being in the world. We change our perspective. We heal by detaching from others and attaching to our own soul. And I'm not saying we don't have relationships with others. Our relationships take on a very different quality. It is not one of dependence on the attention, approval, admiration, and validation of others, but on letting go and allowing others to be exactly as they are, without the need to change them to be what we want or need them to be in order to feel okay. In working with those who have been narcissistically abused, the common thread is that those who have suffered at the hands of a narcissist want to change the narcissist so they can feel okay. And this is backward thinking that is completely codependent. There are three C's of codependency. You didn't cause it, you can't control it, and you can't cure it. With the three C's, we're talking about the codependent's belief that they are somehow the cause of the toxic behavior, and they invest an incredible amount of energy trying to control or cure it. I have countless people write to me to ask if narcissistic personality disorder can be cured. And the other popular question is, how do I know he or she is really a narcissist? That question is asked because the codependent wants to know what his or her chances of curing that person is. If he or she is a narcissist, according to popular understanding, there's no cure and therefore one's situation is hopeless. If he or she is not a narcissist, then maybe there's hope of a cure. Curing the narcissist or the drug addict, the sex addict or the alcoholic need never be our focus. This is an example of outer focusing. We have a dysfunctional belief that by curing the other, we can have what we want. And what we want is usually a healthy, functional relationship. But you can't take extremely dysfunctional people and have a healthy, functional relationship with them. You can't take two dysfunctional people, put them together, and expect a healthy, functional environment. It will be toxic. The only way we can heal toxicity within our relationships is to focus on healing the toxicity within ourselves. We need to heal our toxic beliefs, our destructive ways of thinking and being in the world, our dysfunctional relationship with ourselves. Some people have a degree of understanding that when you heal yourself, the world around you changes. These people typically ask me, if I heal myself, do I think the narcissist will change? My answer to that question is no, but when you heal yourself, you're no longer focusing on the narcissist as the source of your problems and the cause of your unhappiness. Instead, you detach from the narcissist and see how it is your choices that are keeping you stuck. Your power is in your choice. The real question is, why do you choose this? What need within you is being met by your choice to be with the narcissist or addict? What I see that may help you to answer this question is, with a narcissist, he or she initially idealizes his or her potential mate, putting you up on a pedestal and showering you with attention and affection. And initially, this is euphoric for most. Your need to be wanted, desired, held in high esteem, loved, given attention and affection is a dream come true because it may be the first time you've received such powerful attention focused on you. Or you may only get involved in relationships where there is such single focused attention upon you. It may feel like love. It is very illusional, however, because your being on the pedestal is completely dependent upon your fitting into the ideal of the other. And once you stray from being the other's idealized partner, which you will, you begin to fall from your pedestal. And in most cases, it's more like you're ripped from your pedestal, and sometimes overnight. Once ripped from your pedestal, you can never really be resurrected. You've already disappointed the other and shown that you are human, and narcissists despise human fragility. And so your focus in the toxic dynamic is to try and get back into the good graces of the other, and you will often blame and judge yourself for failing to be good enough. You will often shame yourself, just as the narcissist has shamed you. And when you learn to detach from the other, you bring your attention back to the only person you have any control over, you. Detachment doesn't always mean leaving a relationship right away, although this is often the healthiest thing you can do. But you do need to remove your focus from that person and return it to you. When you're in an abusive relationship, it becomes very difficult to remove your focus on someone who is demanding your attention in a toxic way, and so leaving is the only way to get healthy. If you burn your hand on the stove, you can't heal if you keep your hand on the stove. You have to remove it and focus on healing the hand. The first step in recovery for any codependent is to identify your addictive focus and detach from that focus. For example, if your addictive focus is on a narcissist, remove your focus on that person and return it to yourself. Not that this is easy. This is the codependent dilemma. Codependents by nature are focused on the other, and removing the focus is a real challenge and may take some time. Your attention should never be on removing your focus from the other, but returning your focus to yourself. The more you focus on yourself and your own needs for healing and recovery, the less you will focus on the other. This is a process that takes time. And we often need help and support to do this, either from a good counselor and or a 12-step program for codependents, such as CODA or ACA, which stands for Adult Children of Alcoholics. But ACA also is Adult Children of Alcoholics and Dysfunctional Families, so it's not limited to alcoholic parenting. The 12-step program is really a program about taking responsibility for what shows up in your life and finding the power within to change yourself so that your outer circumstances can change. The first step in the 12-step recovery program is admitting you are powerless over your addiction, which is admitting you are powerless to change the other. This step alone helps us to realize we really don't have the power to change anyone or anything outside of ourselves. Our power comes in changing our actions, our reactions, toxic beliefs, and shame-based thinking. The second step is we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And this step would suggest that we're not sane in the way we've been living our lives. And most people who come to me for counseling feel they're going crazy due to the crazy-making behavior of the other. But we have to focus on our own inner crazy, which is the unhealthy ways in which we view life and others. We recognize there's something greater than our small selves. We have a direct connection to a spiritual power, a higher power, something bigger than our small selves. We learn that we have direct access to this power, and it is a fundamental part of our healing and recovery. This power can restore us to sanity. It restores us to sanity because connecting with the divine within becomes our new focus, which is what brings about our healing. Unlike traditional religion, we don't look for this higher power out there in a church or a temple, a priest or a guru. We learn that the higher power is within us. We can appeal to it directly by learning to go within and seek solace in the silence of our being. The third step is, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him or her. We all have to find our own way to a personal understanding of God or a higher power. You don't have to use the word God. A lot of people have trouble with that. I've had people who have written to me angry because I use the word God in my writing and broadcast, and they feel the need to educate me to the fact that not everybody is comfortable with using the word God. However, this is just another codependent attempt to control outer people by telling them what you think they should and should not talk about. I'm uncomfortable with the word God, so I'm going to ask you to change the terminology you use so that I can be more comfortable. The whole idea of the 12-step program is to find your own understanding, but also allow others their own understanding and their own expression. We're not here to control how others define a higher power. We're here to define our own. And this is a very personal journey. It's not a journey that can be shared. You have to develop your own personal relationship with this higher power, and it may be very difficult at first, especially if you grew up in a fundamental religious belief system and the God of your understanding is a judging, condemning God who tells you that you are a lowly, shameful sinner. The God of our understanding, if we are to heal, would be a loving, supportive presence in your life, not a judging, condemning, and shaming presence. Most of us have had just about enough of that. For me, the God of my understanding is the life force that is pulsing within me. I recognize that I am not my body. My body is just the vehicle for my journey here on planet Earth. At the end of my life, I will drop my body, but the substance within the body that I call me will go on to another experience in another dimension of reality. To appeal to the God within is to appeal to that substance within me that lives and moves and has its being as me in the world. This substance is not my thoughts. It is not my actions. It is not my beliefs. It is not my behavior. It is the purity of my soul essence, that aspect of me that is soul. Our thoughts can be toxic and crazy-making. It can often feel that we're in a hamster wheel spinning all these thoughts that reinforce our sense of self as inadequate. We need to realize that we are not our thoughts. We simply have thoughts, and the more we identify with our thoughts, the more power they have. When we meditate or drop deep within ourselves, the goal is often to quiet our mind, quiet the restless thoughts, and find the stillness within. However, quieting the mind is really challenging to do. The monkey mind wants to be busy all the time. So we have to find a way to be still, breathe, and listen to the silence, even if the mind is still busy. A busy mind doesn't necessarily mean we're not achieving a connection with the divinity within us. Turning our will and our lives over to a higher power is about realizing that this higher aspect of self has the inherent wisdom to know what is good for you, but you have to learn to trust in that wisdom. Not my will, but thy will be done. What I believe this means is that we have our small ego self and our divine self. When we get our ego self out of the way, we open to following the lead of a power much greater, But we can only do this when we recognize how the ego shows up and wants to control everything. It is our ego that is attached to our self-perception, how others perceive us, our identity based on what we look like, what we do for a living, what we have or what we've accumulated, how we see ourselves and how others see us. When we release our attachment to those things, we find what is important. We recognize that we're not perfect. We recognize we are perfect in the eyes of God. We're not flawed. We're not unworthy. We're not useless. We're not a failure. We are pure, lovable, worthy, and beautiful just as we are. We don't have to change who we are. However, we may need to change how we perceive ourselves, which will change how we interact with the world around us. The fourth step is we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. This means that we are willing to search within ourselves to see where we are creating our dramas and where we are dysfunctional in our actions, thoughts, and beliefs. We come to see that we're not perfect in a human sense. We make mistakes, and hopefully we will learn from those mistakes. Our mistakes are our teachers. We often unknowingly hurt others because we're so caught up in our dramas. We don't take our own inventory so that we can hit ourselves over the head with it. Shaming ourselves and others is never productive. We take our inventory so we can identify what needs our love and our positive attention. Self-love is the only route to true healing. We don't heal by beating ourselves up, by judging or condemning, finding fault and shaming ourselves. And we don't heal by beating up on others. Love is the highest path to healing. But we must understand what it truly means to love. It doesn't mean that you stay in an unhealthy relationship or with an unhealthy person. We must also understand tough love. Love is often letting go of what is unhealthy in our lives. By letting go, we stop enabling and allow that person to be exactly who he or she is without needing it to be any different any longer. The fifth step is we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. This means we're willing to see how we are keeping the pain, the trauma, and the drama alive through our own actions and interactions with it. We admit our own weaknesses and how we get in our own way. We admit our addictions. We admit our desire to control the outcome. We admit our shame-based thinking and believing. We come to terms with these things within ourselves that are keeping us stuck in unhealthy relationships with others and in a dysfunctional relationship with ourselves. The sixth step is we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. This is where the miracles begin to happen. We recognize our healing truly does come from within. And as we appeal to the God within or that higher self or higher power, we receive the guidance we need to heal and awaken to our true selves. We also receive healing through the power of prayer, simply by asking. Ask and you shall receive. I believe when we ask for help from our higher power, we're appealing to that aspect of us that is in alignment with our highest good, and we are appropriately guided. The seventh step is to humbly ask God, or our higher power, to remove our shortcomings. Now that we're ready, now that we ask, we allow the miracles to work in our lives. We make room for those miracles. We learn to get out of our own way and allow. Step 8 is we made a list of all persons we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them. When we're addicts of any kind, which most of society is, we can get so entangled in our addictions and our quest for outer satisfaction, or we are so absorbed in our pain that we hurt or neglect others in the process. Part of our recovery is a willingness to look at how our own dramas and issues have caused us to ignore the important people in our lives or do harmful things to the people we love and care about. In our recovery, we learn to be aware of the effect our actions and behavior have on others. This does not mean that we are people pleasers or cater to the needs of others, but we need to consider the needs of others in the process, especially our children. I've heard stories from clients about how they've lost friends and family because they were so absorbed in their narcissistic relationship, they failed to nurture their friendships and their relationships with family, and they just faded away. Or they did things like fail to show up for agreed upon meetings with friends or cancel at the last moment because the narcissist in their lives wanted to have them all to themselves. We have to take responsibility for this kind of thing and make it right with those that we've harmed. Making it right doesn't mean we'll get the friendship back, but at least we could admit our responsibility and make honest amends. Step 9 is making direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And I would also add to this, or injure ourselves. So when it comes to a narcissistic person or abuser, be careful not to take responsibility when the responsibility is not yours to take. This is a common codependent thing to do. We can blame ourselves for the failure of a relationship, and in our need to control it or get it back, we may be tempted to apologize for something we really didn't do. Often the abuser uses abusive behavior, and when we react to it, the focus is on our reaction rather than the abusive behavior. And this is a typical narcissistic thing to do. When we're caught up in the toxicity and the confusion, we will often believe we are somehow at fault for the abuse, or we too will focus on our reaction to the abuse and end up apologizing for our reactions. Usually making any kind of amends to the narcissist isn't a good idea because it would injure you. The narcissist would use your apology for further shaming and manipulation. The best thing you could do for your own healing is to get away from that person. Step 10 is continue to take personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admit it. This simply means to continue to live from that place of awareness of how your codependent behavior may be harming others in some way. Step 11 is sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him or her, praying only for knowledge of his or her will for us and the power to carry that out. This is why we practice prayer and meditation, or sitting in the silence and stillness. It is in this place that we learn to tune inward to that guidance and follow that guidance. And the final 12th step is having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. We try to carry this message to others and practice these principles in all our affairs. Having a spiritual awakening is a result of becoming spiritually aware, learning to be self-responsible, accountable, and allowing that higher power to guide our lives. Although we don't actively need to go out and share this message with others, we share by simply being an example of recovery. We share by attending 12-step meetings and sharing our progress in those meetings. You can take your newfound awareness into the business world or into your personal life, but you don't need to talk about your recovery to everyone, unless you choose to. When we go from codependence to soul dependence, We learn to depend on that higher power that is guiding our soul to the next level of self-awareness. We listen to the calling in our soul, the still small voice within, the inner stirring. The way of becoming truly liberated is through bringing your attention and energy back to the self. We have to learn how not to take the actions and behavior of others personally. What someone else does is about them, not you. What you do and how you react is what is about you. So your inner work is to be aware of and understand your own feelings and reactions. Your work is to understand your own needs. Your work is to understand the role that you play in your relationships and how you contribute to the relationships that are toxic and dysfunctional. Self-reflection and self-evaluation isn't about shaming yourself. You've already had enough of that. It's more about understanding yourself. You need to understand. Why am I attracted to such a dysfunctional person? Or why do I get so triggered when he or she does this or that? It is not about making you wise about something bad or shameful about you. It is about understanding your whys so that you can make healthier choices in the future. Recovery from codependency comes from a desire to have healthy relationships. It comes from a desire to be healthy. When we grow up in dysfunctional environments and in a dysfunctional society, it is a lot of work to find that healthy place within yourself. But we are living in a time of great healing and transformation. We are determined not to carry forward the sins of our fathers, so to speak. The buck stops here. We don't wish to pass down to our children what was passed to us, but it may already be too late for that. Now we may be in damage control, trying to right the wrongs of the past, make amends to those we have hurt through our unconsciousness. We must also understand that we were hurt by the unconsciousness of our parents and others that shaped our lives. Although there are some people who get a charge out of hurting others, people normally do the most damage through being unconscious. Once again, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. This speaks to the unconscious actions and behaviors of those who have trespassed against you. One thing we often find difficult to look at is how we ourselves have been unconscious and have hurt others through our own lack of awareness. Recovery is about understanding who we are, where we have been, and where we are going. We may have come from extreme dysfunction, and where we are now is in recovery from extreme dysfunction. And where we are going is to a place where we can have healthy, whole relationships with others. And of course, recovery from codependency is about having a healthy relationship with yourself first and foremost. From that healthy relationship with yourself comes healthy relationships with others. Becoming whole is about filling that inner emptiness with you and then sharing with others from your overflow. Your soul is your guide. It is seeking you just as you are seeking it. It wants to be connected with you. It is you. And as you realize that this soul aspect of self is your true mate in life, your true soulmate, you can learn to rely on this aspect of yourself and become soul dependent rather than codependent. Thank you for listening. And if you'd like to get more information about my work, you can go to narcissismfree.com and pathbacktoself.com. where I offer lots of books, articles, counseling services, hypnotherapy, and other processes to help you to become all that you are meant to be. Thanks again for listening. Have a great day.